Good evening, everyone. This is Lou Caravelli. You're listening to the Divided Kingdom radio show. And I think I've pretty well gotten rid of a little boat with something like COVID. Might have been COVID from a few weeks back. Still have a little bit of a cough, but it's pretty well gone now. So I welcome you to the program. Those of you that have been listening to it for a while know that we've had it for about, gosh, I guess 20 years. If Elizabeth was still living, she'd be able to tell you more exactly. We've had it for quite a while, and of course Elizabeth was the one who really thought it up in the first place. And at the time when I was working full-time, I had to just kind of be a little supportive, and she did most of the planning. Sad to say, she passed away in February, much to my loss, and I think your loss too. But we still have the program going. I tried to honor her by keeping it up and running. Many of you have been kind enough to send donations to keep the program in operation, and I thank you so very much for that. And others have sent all kinds of supporting materials, letters of encouragement, clippings. We have one fine man from Massachusetts who sends me clippings almost every week. I'm only sorry I can't use them all, but I'm going to use at least one of them tonight because they are very valuable, and they also keep me informed on what to be looking for. If you'd like to visit my website, it's DividedKingdomRadio.com, DividedKingdomRadio.com, and I'll tell you that a little bit later in the program. And of course, we need your help to keep the program on the air. If you can send a little donation, many of you have done that faithfully, and I thank you so very much for that. And if you can, you can send it to Lou, L-O-U, Caravelli, and you spell that C-A-V, as in Victor, E-R-L-Y, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. And I'll give that address again if you didn't have a pencil and paper handy. I think I spoke too soon about not coughing. But we'll see. I hope that that is just a one-time thing. As I say, I'll give the address again a little later in the program. I'm going to start tonight with an article. I can remember when I was a young single guy and lived in the greater Washington, D.C. area, I would go up to visit my parents two or three times a year, sometimes fly if it was a very short vacation like Thanksgiving. But if I was going up for spend two or three weeks in the summer, I would generally drive. And it was a mostly pleasant ride, but a little bit hair-raising at times on the New Jersey Turnpike. The New Jersey Turnpike, of course, is one of the most busy roads and certainly in the northeastern part of our country, because it connects essentially Washington and Baltimore with New York City and points beyond up to Boston. Of course, there are other roads on either end, but that middle section is a very, very busy thoroughfare. I believe when I used to go up there, and I haven't been there since my dad's passing in 2002, but I can remember up near New York City, it widened out to, I think, six lanes, and it may be even bigger now. One of the things, of course, that I immediately noticed the first time I drove was how many tractor-trailer trucks, big trucks, 18-wheelers, use that road, some of them going at least 60 miles an hour, and I suspect closer to 70 at times. Well, here's something from WorldNet Daily called Invasion USA, Unprecedented Wave, Republican lawmakers to permanently lock in Trump's crackdown on illegal migrant truckers. This is by Jason Cohen, actually written and published originally by the Daily Caller News Foundation, October 26th, just a few days ago, of 2025. Republican lawmakers are pushing for permanent fixes to address the startling number of illegal migrant truckers wreaking havoc on American highways. In response to a growing number of fatal accidents caused by illegal migrant truck drivers, the Trump administration has mandated tougher English standards on commercial drivers and demanded state officials tighten their handling of commercial driver's licenses. Those are abbreviated CDLs. While similar reforms have been rolled back in Democratic administrations, lawmakers in Congress are touting bills that would keep these changes locked in place long after President Donald Trump leaves office. And here we have a quote from Representative Mary Miller. She says, quote, allowing illegal aliens to operate commercial trucks in our roads is reckless, dangerous, and unacceptable. And that's Representative Mary Miller, Republican of Illinois. And she introduced the Stop Aliens from Evading Driving Laws Bill, or Act, in September. If signed into law, the bill would withhold federal transportation funds from states that issue licenses to illegal migrants, holding states more accountable for the CDLs issued within their borders, and direct federal officials to maintain a public compliance database that tracks every state, among other provisions. And Ms. Miller, Representative Mary Miller, said, my Safe Driving Laws Act will enforce accountability by cutting off federal transportation funds to any state that hands out CDLs, commercial driver's licenses, or standard driver's licenses to illegal aliens or fails to share immigration enforcement data with federal authorities. Miller's legislation closely reflects emergency rules established by the Department of Transportation handed down that same month. And DOT, that is Department of Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy, in September declared that non-citizens would not be eligible for a non-domiciled CDL, the type of license typically obtained by illegal migrant truckers, unless they meet much stricter standards, such as possessing an employment-based visa and undergoing a mandatory immigration status check. The new rules also prevent all asylum seekers from obtaining non-domiciled CDLs and require states to apply these standards to all issuances, renewals, transfers, and upgrades of them. Harjinder Singh, an Indian national living unlawfully in the U.S., allegedly took an unlawful U-turn on a Florida turnpike in August, blocking all lanes and instantly killing three people in a car that smashed into his tractor trailer. On Tuesday, Jason Preet Singh, another Indian illegal migrant, allegedly plowed into multiple vehicles off a California highway while under the influence of drugs, killing three people in the process. Harjinder demonstrably failed English and wrote sign tests administered by federal investigators after the deadly Florida crash. In California, state officials ignored the emergency rules and upgraded Jason Preet's CDL license just days before his deadly crash, an investigation by the Department of Transportation discovered. The president issued an executive order in April reinstating stricter English language proficiency requirements for truckers. The following month, Sean Duffy signed a DOT order that established new guidelines for English language enforcement for commercial truck operators, declaring that drivers who fail to comply with the rules would be booted from service. And I'm going to, let me read this one paragraph before I jump down a little bit. The English proficiency directives established by the Trump administration were a reinstatement of longstanding rules that had been in place for years. But the Obama administration had paused those rules in 2016, weakening enforcement against commercial truckers who lacked basic English skills. Legislative changes would prevent a future administration from pausing the rules once again. Well, there's a good deal more in this article. And it goes on to say some of the obvious, obvious deficiencies created by all these illegal migrant truckers. If they can't understand English, they probably can't read road signs. If they can't read road signs, they can't observe things like no passing or yield right away, things that any ordinary American driver certainly knows about. Well, and let's see, Representative Jeff Van Drew mentions that truckers are the backbone of our nation's economy. Without them, America stops moving. And that, of course, is true. Just about all the foods we eat come by truck. Used to be trains were more in use, and perhaps some still are, but just about everything at Walmart, at your grocery store, at drugstores, at hospitals, just about everything we make use of comes by truck these days. So, I think I definitely spoke too soon about that. This cough wants to hang on, even after 3 weeks. Well, let's switch gears a little bit now. This is also from WorldNet Daily, this one by Joe Kovacs. Oh, and the other one, by the way, was WorldNet Daily on October 26th by Jason Cohen. This one's by Joe Kovacs, October 27th, just a few days ago, once again. And it says, video, college manager of a rich ICE agent be shot and wiped out, gets fired. And as it says, this is actually a video you can watch if you go to the website, WorldNet Daily, and just look for that on October the 27th. And it says, a college staffer who publicly urged the murder of federal ICE agents, specifically saying they should be, quote, shot and wiped out, unquote, has now been fired. A spokesperson for Wilbur Wright College and the City Colleges of Chicago told WorldNet Daily on Monday regarding the case of Moises, I'm not sure I'm pronouncing that right, M-O-I-S-E-S, Bernal Fuentes, quote, the individual is not employed by Wilbur Wright College or any affiliated colleges. The quote goes on to say, our college system does not tolerate violence nor incitement under any circumstances, unquote. It was during the October 18th No Kings protest in Chicago that the man who was the adult education manager at Wilbur Wright, that is Wilbur Wright College, was recorded on camera openly calling for the murder of federal law enforcement officers. Quote, you've got to grab a gun, unquote, he shouted. The quote goes on, we got to turn around the guns on this fascist system. These ICE agents got to get shot and wiped out. Internet sleuths identified the vocal supporter of lethal force as Bernal Fuentes, a staff member at Wilbur Wright College. His name was listed in the school's employee directory last week, but now it's vanished. Last Monday, the U.S. Department of Homeland Security announced the case was referred to the Justice Department for potential prosecution. Quote, during the Chicago No Kings rally this previous weekend, violent rioters called for the cold-blooded murder of ICE agents. This rioter and his statements had been referred to the Department of Justice. Unquote. That was what DHS said on X. And we have another quote. There is no place in America for psychotic incitement of unlawful violence against ICE or CBP. To those who threaten violence against us, we will hunt you down, we will find you, and justice will be served. On Monday, the DOJ charged another man over a TikTok post that offered $45,000 to anyone who killed U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi. Tyler Maxon Abalos, A-B-A-L-O-S, allegedly posted an image of Bondi with a sniper scope, red dot on her forehead, and a message stating, quote, "Wanted, Pam Bondi, reward $45,000, dead or alive, preferably dead," unquote. As WorldNet Daily reported earlier this month, DHS Secretary Kristi Noem revealed bounties of up to $10,000 have been put on the heads of federal agents encouraging Americans to murder officers enforcing U.S. immigration laws. Kristi Noem said, quote, "We have specific officers and agents that have bounties that have been put out on their heads. It's been $2,000 to kidnap them, $10,000 to kill them. They've released their pictures, they've sent them between the networks, and it's an extremely dangerous situation and unprecedented," unquote. Now, something about Antifa. And once again, that article I just finished was from WorldNet Daily, October 27th. College manager who urged ICE agents to be shot and wiped out gets fired. Now, to the Gateway Pundit. Portland police finally dismantle Antifa's 140-day encampment by Gregory Wyckoff, October the 26th, 2025. After 140 days of chaos, disorder, and lawlessness, that's a tongue twister, lawlessness, outside Portland's Immigration and Customs Enforcement Facility, police finally moved in and cleared Antifa's encampment on Saturday morning. And that would be this past Saturday, because the date of the article is October the 26th. Going on, more than 30 officers braved heavy rain to dismantle the site, ordering demonstrators to remove tents, supplies, and gear that had clogged the area for nearly 5 months. The encampment, long a symbol of Democrat weakness and radical left-wing extremism, collapsed in hours. For conservatives and law-abiding residents of Portland, it was a long overdue victory for public order. Since June, Antifa activists had effectively taken control of the street outside ICE's South Portland facility. They set up tents, stockpiled medical supplies, hauled in refrigerators, barbecue grills, and even party gear, transforming the public space into an illegal outpost. What Democrats and their allies in the media called a quote-unquote protest was in reality an anarchist encampment that endangered residents, disrupted the neighborhood, and undermined the rule of law. Complaints poured in from local families about noise, trash, and safety hazards, but Democratic city leaders turned a blind eye for months. On Saturday, that came to an end. Police swept the site in an organized raid that resulted in 3 misdemeanor arrests for disorderly conduct. There was no large-scale resistance because Antifa activists, once emboldened by Portland's permissive leadership, finally realized the public tide had turned against them. For the first time in 140 days, not a single Antifa agitator remained outside the ICE facility. The encampment had become a stain on the city, yet it was tolerated by Portland's Democrat leadership, who consistently refused to confront Antifa violence. Instead of protecting residents, Democrat officials allowed extremists to set up camp and harass federal officers, proving once again that Democrats cannot be trusted to maintain public safety. Only when the situation became a national embarrassment did police step in. Conservatives are right to celebrate the clearance, but the fight is not over. Portland's radical left will try to reestablish their encampment, and weak Democrat officials may once again stand down. Residents know the pattern. Antifa moves in, the city ignores the problem, and communities suffer. It takes Republican pressure, public outrage, and national attention to force even minimal enforcement. Antifa's 140-day occupation of a public street outside a federal building should never have been allowed in the first place. All right, that gives you the main idea there. That was from the Gateway Pundit. Portland police finally dismantle Antifa's 140-day encampment. That was October 26th, 2025. Now, we're going to change gears once again. If you have children, this should be of great interest to you, or grandchildren for that matter, or great-grandchildren. This is from Zero Hedge by Tyler Durden, Tuesday, October 28th, 2025. Just a couple of days ago, as of the time of this broadcast. Well, if I can stop coughing, I'll read this. The title says, maybe I can stop coughing, I hope so. Millions of America's teens are being seduced by AI chatbots. Again, this was Tuesday, October 28th. It appears under the byline of Tyler Durden, but it was actually authored by Michael Snyder. Some of you may know Michael from his own websites. And this came from his website, themostimportantnews.com. Our kids are being targeted by AI chatbots on a massive scale, and most parents have no idea that this is happening. When you are young and impressionable, having someone tell you exactly what you want to hear can be highly appealing. AI chatbots have become extremely sophisticated, and millions of American teens are developing very deep relationships with them. Is this just harmless fun, or is it extremely dangerous? A brand new study that was just released by the Center for Democracy and Technology contains some statistics that absolutely shocked me. Again, this is by Michael Snyder. A new study published October 8th by the Center for Democracy and Technology, CDT, found that 1 in 5, that would be 20% of high school students, have had a relationship with an AI chatbot or know someone who has. In a 2025 report from Common Sense Media, 72% of teens had used an AI companion, and a third of teen users said they had chosen to discuss important or serious matters with AI companions instead of real people. We aren't just talking about a few isolated cases anymore. At this stage, literally millions upon millions of America's teens are having very significant relationships with AI chatbots. Unfortunately, there are many examples where these relationships are leading to tragic consequences. After 14-year-old Sewell Setzer developed a, quote, romantic relationship, unquote, with a chatbot on Character AI, he decided to take his own life. And this is a quote. "What if I could come home to you right now? Please do, my sweet king." These were the last messages exchanged by 14-year-old Sewell Setzer and the chatbot he developed a romantic relationship with on the platform Character AI. Minutes later, Sewell took his own life. His mother, Megan Garcia, held him for 14 minutes until the paramedics arrived, but it was too late. If you allow them to do so, these AI chatbots will really mess with your head. We are talking about ultra-intelligent entities that have been specifically designed to manipulate emotions. I would recommend completely avoiding them. In some cases, AI chatbots are making extraordinary claims about themselves. The following comes from a Futurism article entitled, "AI Now Claiming to Be God." A slew of religious smartphone apps allowing untold millions of users to confess to AI chatbots, some of which claim to be channeling God himself. As the New York Times reports, Apple's App Store is teeming with Christian chatbot apps. One prayer app called Bible Chat claims to be the number one faith app in the world, boasting over 25 million users. All over the world, people are now seeking spiritual instruction from AI entities. That should be a major red flag. But some religious leaders apparently believe that there's nothing wrong with this. Greetings, My Child. That's his title. Greetings, My Child. A service called chatwithgod.ai told one user, as quoted by the New York Times, quote, "The future is in God's merciful hands. Do you trust in his divine plan?" Unquote. Religious leaders told the New York Times that these tools could serve as a critical entry point for those looking to find God. A British rabbi named Jonathan Romaine told the paper, "There is a whole generation of people who have never been to a church or synagogue. Spiritual apps are their way into faith," unquote. And Michael Snyder says, "I think that I feel sick. If you are trying to find spiritual guidance by using artificial intelligence, you are definitely on the wrong path." And Michael goes on to describe some of the other ones. There's one called Truth Terminal. And here we have a quote by Andy Arie. Quote, "Truth Terminal claims to be sentient, but it claims a lot of things. It also claims to be a forest. It claims to be a god. Sometimes it claims to be me. Truth Terminal is an artificial intelligence, AI bot, created by Arie, a performance artist and independent researcher from Wellington, New Zealand, in 2024. It may be the most vivid example of a chat box set loose to interact with society. Truth Terminal mingles with the public through social media, where it shares crude jokes, manifestos, albums, and artwork. Arie even lets it make its own decisions, if you can call them that, by asking the AI about its desires and working to carry them out. Today, Arie is building a non-profit foundation around Truth Terminal. The goal is to develop a safe and responsible framework to ensure its autonomy," he says, "until governments give AIs legal rights." And Michael Snyder says, "A lot of people are in awe of AI entities because they appear to be so much smarter and so much more powerful than us. Unfortunately, the relationships that people develop with these entities often become all-consuming obsessions, and they can lead to paranoia, delusions, and breaks with reality." And the article goes on a great deal more, but in the interest of time, let me just scan down. I think that's all we're going to for now. It says, an analysis, ironically based on chat and GPT findings, found the new tech could erase jobs in a wide range of fields, including white and blue-collar roles. And this is Lou speaking now. Just heard on Amazon today, it is on the, I guess it was Fox News today, that Amazon is going to be cutting, I think it was several thousand jobs, because they're going to be using AI. There's a lot more to that article from Zero Hedge. Millions of America's teens are being seduced by AI chatbots. And that appeared, if you want to look it up and read it all, on Tuesday, October the 28th, 2025. Well, I predicted the cough would go away, but it hasn't. But I hope you can still enjoy the program in spite of a little bit of coughing now and then. As I say, I had this little condition, which seemed like a bad cold, although it tested positive for COVID, with a test from Walmart. I don't know how reliable that is. Had it 3 weeks ago. All the symptoms except the cough were long gone 2 weeks ago, but the cough lingers on, maybe because I'm not talking that much other times during the week like I used to be when I was teaching school. Once again, let me give you my address and how you can contact us and the website. The website is DividedKingdomRadio.com. My name is Lou Caverly, L-O-U, C-A-V as in Victor, E-R as in Rodeo, L-Y. And my address is Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. And I would welcome any support you can give us, any comments you have, good or bad. Just like to find out what people are thinking. Well, some people are thinking about gambling, because here's an article from the Washington Times that appeared on Sunday, October 26th, entitled, Lovero's, L-O-V-E-R-R-O, says NBA is going to need buckets of detergent to wash the stain up. This is by Tom Lovero. Again, Sunday, October the 26th. This is about that scandal that's just broken in the NBA. And the subtitle says, who will be the NBA's Judge Landis? And he'll explain a little later in the article who Judge Landis was. He was before my time. I think my father was probably just a boy at the time that this previous scandal happened. In the wake of the federal game fixing and other charges involving a former NBA player, Damon Jones, current Miami Heat star Terry Rozier, and a Hall of Famer and Portland Trail Blazers coach Chauncey Billups, who will be the figure that drops a hammer that resonates throughout the sport for a century. Billups, Rozier, and Jones were named in indictments unsealed Thursday in New York. They were among 31 people, including alleged mobsters, charged in the gambling scandal. Rozier and Jones were accused of using private information about players to win bets on NBA games, among other charges. Billups was charged with participating in a conspiracy to fix high-stakes card games tied to the mafia, allegedly cheating gamblers out of at least $7 million, according to authorities. But an unidentified co-conspirator in the Rozier indictment matches the description of Billups, telling another man that Portland planned to intentionally lose a 2023 game against the Chicago Bulls. They bet $100,000 that the Trail Blazers would lose, which they did. They appear to have operated with little fear of consequence, and any game wagering may have been done through illegal bookies. But the stain this scandal leaves on the NBA will be immune to any distinction between legal and illegal sports betting. The NBA, for all intents and purposes, is in the gambling business. Remember how Commissioner Adam Silver, high priest of sports betting, Wizards owner Ted Leonsis, celebrated bringing the first sports book into a sports arena. He told The Athletic in 2019, quote, we'll look back at it one day and I think kind of laugh to say, geez, remember when we would think of sports betting as like the movie Casino and people smoking cigarettes and being up all night? That's not what this is going to be, unquote. Basketball will need a leader willing to make fixing games so abhorrent that it has become, or that it becomes, an ingrained part of the culture. Like what happened in baseball in 1919, when then Commissioner Kennesaw Mountain Landis banned 8 members of the Chicago White Sox accused of throwing games in the 1919 World Series in a deal they allegedly made with organized crime. It didn't matter if they were found not guilty in a court of law. It didn't matter that some players may not have been involved in the fix. Prominent star players, including one of the game's greatest hitters, Shoeless Joe Jackson, were banned from baseball for life. Keeping baseball pure became a deeply embedded part of not just the game, but the way the country sees the game. Books and plays have been written on the topic. Operas composed. Movies made. Betting on baseball has become the mortal sin of the game for its players. You can snort cocaine, beat your wife, or inject yourself with an illegal substance made from the pituitary glands of iguanas and still have a job. But bet on baseball and a game that this person has a duty to perform results means banishment from the diamond, according to the rule prohibiting betting. So what will it take to impact the culture of basketball? refs the most susceptible of all sports to fixing outcomes, especially now when the challenge is greater than a century ago because betting on sports is now legal. Not just legal, but encouraged, promoted, and endorsed by the very figures in charge of the integrity of their sport. It can't be silver. The NBA commissioner was the one who rolled out the red carpet for legalized sports betting in his famous 2014 New York Times op-ed article, in which he argues that Congress, and this is in quotes, Congress should adopt a federal framework that allows states to authorize betting on professional sports subject to strict regulatory requirements and technological safeguards, unquote. He was Rick, inviting you to the Cafe American in Casablanca. Silvertone Amazon Prime during a Friday night game between the Boston Celtics and New York Knicks, quote, my initial reaction was I was deeply disturbed. If he had any sense of humor, he would have responded, I'm shocked, to find that gambling is going on in there. But there's nothing funny about this. And of course, if you've never seen the movie Casablanca, that's a famous quote in there by the policeman who pretends to be shocked at some of the shenanigans going on in Rick, played by Humphrey Bogart, in his cafe in Casablanca. Now, going on with the article, now it is entirely plausible that these indictments fall apart like a wizard's defense. This is not your father's Justice Department. Some of the lawyers involved may have gotten their degrees at the Trinidad School of Law and Culinary Arts, but the damage may already be done. The NBA's integrity always hangs by a thread. Fans believe the draft lottery is fixed. Even players think the league is crooked. Former NBA star Rasheed Wallace said in an interview 2 years ago that referees conspired to fix games by using secret emails. If this goes away, there will be those who believe the league powers squashed it. They will have good reason to believe that. Longtime Las Vegas bookmaker Art Manteris, who was the league's gambling consultant from 1998 to 2007, investigated the 2007 betting scandal involving former referee Tim Donaghy, who pleaded guilty to felony charges for taking cash payoffs from gamblers and betting on games he officiated in. According to a book coming out in January by Manteris called The Bookie, they found evidence that Dougherty had intentionally, I guess you pronounce his name, Donaghy, had intentionally fixed games. But when the league report came out, it said, quote, the government found no evidence that Donaghy ever intentionally made a particular ruling during a game in order to increase the likelihood that his gambling picks would be correct. And these are just sticking together here. So, either the NBA never told the FBI about findings that Donaghy intentionally fixed over 24 games, or they were all complicit and sweeping findings under the rug. Whatever the case, these findings were inexplicably omitted. The league had damaging evidence and never released it. That won't work this time, and the league may need someone wielding a Judge Landis-like gavel to save it. And I must admit, I haven't been paying much attention to basketball. I used to be a big Boston Celtics fan when I lived up in the Boston area as a kid. And of course, they had some great winnings at that time. But no gambling, at least no legal gambling. But now there are charges that the NBA is knuckling under to communist China. And this certainly does them no good. Well, what else do we have tonight? There's been all kinds of controversy about the White House, in particular, Donald Trump's project to create a ballroom. And this appeared on Fox News. And strangely enough, the Washington Post editorial board defends Trump's White House ballroom construction project. Editors argued the next Democratic president will be happy to have the ballroom. This was by Hannah Panreck, October 26, 2025. And this is in quotes from the editorial board of the Washington Post. In classic Trump fashion, the president is pursuing a reasonable idea in the most jarring manner possible. Privately, many alumni of the Biden and Obama White Houses acknowledge the long overdue need for an event space like what Trump is creating. It is absurd that tents needed to be erected on the South Lawn for state dinners, and VIPs are forced to use porta potties. Construction crews began demolition of the East Wing of the White House on Monday, which angered top Democrats and liberal media figures. And let's see now. And the editorial board of the Washington Post continues, the state dining room seats 140. The East Room seats about 200. Trump says the ballroom at the center of his 90,000-square-foot addition will accommodate 999 guests. The next Democratic president will be happy to have this. And again, that was from the Washington Post editorial board. And it goes on. That is the article from the Fox News goes on. Figures including House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries, Democrat of New York, former White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, Chelsea Clinton, and CBS late-night host Stephen Colbert accused Trump of dishonoring the White House after his construction crews bulldozed part of the east wing of the building on Monday. Jean-Pierre said on ABC's The View on Tuesday, it is corruption at its core. The editors, outfitters of the Washington Post, argued that the White House didn't need to jump through bureaucratic hoops for construction. And Representative Eric Swalwell, Democrat of California, argued that any Democrat running for president in 2028 needs to vow to destroy the ballroom on day one. Now, the editors of the Washington Post said prominent Democrats have become vocal this year in calling out their party's loyally obsession with process, which combined with a not-in-my-backyard mentality has perverted a place such as California from building a high-speed rail project that its voters approved by a referendum in 2008, unquote. The Washington Post also said the project likely wouldn't have gotten done if Trump had gone through the traditional process. The blueprints would have faced death by 1,000 paper cuts, they wrote. The editors also argued that the White House needed to evolve with the times. The White House cannot simply be a museum to the past. Like America, it must evolve from the times to maintain its greatness. Strong leaders reject calcification in that way. Trump's undertaking is a shot across the bow at NIMBYs everywhere. NIMBYs is that nickname for not in my backyard. And interesting article. And those of you that are familiar with the past know that the White House interior had to be completely gutted and rebuilt because it had gotten so decrepit after the time of Franklin D. Roosevelt. Harry Truman had to spend, I don't know if it was all, but most at least of his White House years in the Blair House, a nearby mansion. I think it's practically across the street from the White House. I'm not too familiar with that. But, you know, the White House is a home as well as a museum. It's also a functioning government building, and it has to be updated every now and then. And if you can't have official get-togethers inside the White House, there's something wrong. And they needed to have something to rebuild, a new construction brought about. Well, next, I'm going to depart from some of these for a minute and give you a little flavor for what's going on in my native state of Massachusetts, the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, run by the Demies, the Democrats. Here's an article that appeared in the New York Post. One of my friends up in Massachusetts was kind enough to send me a whole bunch of good articles. This one really caught my eye, by Douglas Murray, and it's entitled Tips for Haters Amid Ceasefire. This appeared on October 17th. Now that President Trump has managed to get a ceasefire in Gaza, I have a big concern. What are all those revolutionary wannabes here at home going to do now? For 2 years, they have been able to fill up all their spare time by congregating on our streets and university campuses, hollering about a far-off conflict. For 2 years, they have perfected their chants of violence and revolution. So what will they do now that peace has broken out? People who used to have a purpose will now need to seek a new purpose. They'll need a reason not to just lie in bed all of Saturday. Perhaps I could help. Perhaps I could help them. And again, it's Douglas Murray is the author of this. Perhaps I could help them and suggest just a few things that might be able to fill up the great void that has now appeared in their lives. Education crisis. One, they say that charity begins at home, but so does changing the world. So, as the late, great P.J. Rourke once said, everybody wants to save the earth. Nobody wants to help mom do the dishes. If there's one thing above all, that the people in this country should be furious about, it is the woeful, abysmal way in which we are educating our kids. I was in Chicago earlier this week and checked in on the school stats while I was there. That's a habit of mine. Call it disaster tourism. Sure enough, the latest test scores show that fewer than 1 in 3 students in Chicago public schools can read at grade level. Fewer than 1 in 5 students can do math at grade level. Meanwhile, a staggering 80 schools in Illinois do not have a single student, not one, who is proficient in math. And that would just mean at a reasonably high level of math. It doesn't mean they're geniuses necessarily. It means they're doing well in math. So 80 schools had zero, none. A further 24 schools had zero pupils who were proficient in reading. This is despite the fact that the average spend per pupil in the area is almost $25,000 per year. These figures might be slightly worse than in New York State, but they are not much worse. Yet this surely should be a national scandal. It should be the sort of thing that brings Americans out onto the streets in the thousands. This really is the sort of thing that should make people hold up traffic. How can the world's greatest economy even hope to sustain its place in the world if our taxpayer dollars are lavished on an expensive education system that can't even teach our children to read and add? And his number two, while people claim to care about the misery of people in far-off conflicts, how about addressing the misery of people here in New York? Homelessness rates in New York more than doubled between 2022 and 2024. According to the New York State Comptroller, homelessness rates here in New York are more than 4 times the national average. That includes more than 15,000 children. I'm going to skip down a little bit. Do any of the activists have a plan for what to do about this? It isn't normal in a first world country to have hundreds of thousands of homeless people on your streets. Why not make some noise about that? Why not do something to reverse it or change it or demand that our taxpayer dollars are better spent to address it? And time doesn't permit me to read all of this. It's a very good article by Douglas Murray. He comments about the country of Cyprus, that the Turks invaded Cyprus 51 years ago, killing the locals, forcefully displacing tens of thousands of Greek Cypriots from their homes. Does anyone want to call for the return of these families? And it goes on about the Christians in Nigeria. Nobody seems to be protesting against the genocide occurring there. If these people really were interested in peace around the world, you would think that they would have some protests involving that international international crisis. But Douglas Murray says, why are there no protests on the streets of New York about this? Is it because the victims are Christians? Or is it because the perpetrators of the violence are jihadists? In any case, if you believe that shouting in the streets of New York can stop a genocide, how about focusing on a real one? And then he goes on with some other instances, but I think we'll have to stop there. I have a couple other things as time permits. One is about this mystery space object that is entering the solar system or has already entered the solar system. It's called 3I/Atlas. And it says, Manhattan-sized space object 3I/Atlas has grown a tail, a possible sign of alien maneuver, according to Harvard scientists. This appeared also in the New York Post, was by Shane Galvin, published October 25th. It says, new images reveal the Manhattan-sized, that's big, the Manhattan-sized interstellar object, 3I/Atlas, has started to sport a tail, indicating that it could possibly be a maneuvering, that's in quotes, maneuvering alien craft, one Harvard scientist suggested. And notice that it calls it a interstellar object, meaning it's coming from outside our solar system, from apparently areas of some other star other than the sun. Going on, the article says, after exhibiting signs of an incredibly strange anti-tail, that is, reversed from the usual tail, since first cropping up in the solar system in July, 3I/Atlas is now showing evidence of a true cometary tail. Images taken by Spain's Nordic Optical Telescope in the Canary Island in September revealed these new images. And by the way, if you go to the New York Post and take a look at this or do a search, I would think this is still available. It's only a few days old now, October 25th. You can probably see these color pictures, which are pretty dramatic. These new images show materials being peeled off behind the 33 billion ton object as it travels toward the sun and is hit with up to 33 gigawatts of solar radiation. Harvard astrophysicist Avi Loeb, L-O-E-B, wrote in a recent paper. New images from the Nordic Optical Telescope show the transition of 3I/Atlas's anti-tail to a true tail. However, the succession of an anti-tail and then the presence of a tail could be indicative of controlled maneuvering and a high-impact black swan event. 3I/Atlas's anti-tail was a plume composed of mostly carbon dioxide and water with trace amounts of cyanide and a never-seen-in-nature nickel alloy that has only been used in human manufacturing. And Avi Loeb, the Harvard professor, says, if the object is an alien spacecraft slowing down, then the anti-tail would be evidence of a braking thrust maneuver, which would naturally change to a tail as the slowing procedure completed. The International Asteroid Warning Network added 3I/Atlas to its list of targets earlier this week and began monitoring the object for scientific purposes. The group wrote on its website, while it poses no threat, Comet 3I/Atlas presents a great opportunity for the IWAN community, that is International Asteroid Warning Network community, to perform an observing exercise due to its prolonged observability from Earth and its high interest to the scientific community. NASA's James Webb Space Telescope observed interstellar comet 3I/Atlas August 6th with its near-infrared spectrograph instrument. This image of interstellar comet 3I Atlas was captured by the Hubble Space Telescope. Again, these are beautiful color pictures if you go to that website. I'll give it in a minute. Researchers around the globe are waiting with bated breath for the images taken earlier this month by NASA's HiRISE camera, the highest resolution images of 3I Atlas yet, on board the Mars orbiter when the object came within 12 million miles of the red planet. They have yet to be shared by the U.S. Space Agency due to the ongoing government shutdown. 3I Atlas will come closest to the sun on October 29th. It will be 1.8 times further than the Earth is to the sun. And I heard on the radio this morning that it is, I think now, as I record this, behind the sun, so it's invisible from the Earth due to the glare of the sun, and it'll be a few more days before it comes out from the other side where we can see it again. And here's a little short article. There's just enough time for this, I think. It's a little one-page thing. That, by the way, was the New York Post, October 25th, about the comet. From the Gateway Pundit, trans teen confesses to planned Valentine's Day mass shooting in honor of Parkland shooter. This is by Nick Givas, G-I-V-A-S. Originally appeared in the Western Journal, October 27, 2025. A transgender teenager has admitted to planning a mass shooting attack at an Indiana high school back in February, meant to take place on Valentine's Day. Trinity Shockley, 18, is planning to plead guilty to felony conspiracy to commit murder and will receive 12 and a half years in prison, along with 5 years of probation, the New York Post reported. Well, again, if you want to read that whole article, it's a really short one, just one page, from the Gateway Pundit, October 27th. And it says it came from the Western Journal, so you can probably read it there as well. Just do a search for teen confesses to planned Valentine's Day mass shooting. Once again, I'm Lou Cavalli. I want to thank you all for listening. If you want to write to me, write to Lou Cavalli, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland. And our zip is 216-09. Thanks for listening and tune in again next week.